Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of On the Line. Today is going to be a really interesting episode, I think, because I have Imogen Pinnell, who is the Health Information Manager at Joe's Cervical Cancer Trust, which is UK's only cervical cancer charity?
Yeah, so we like to call ourselves the leading cervical cancer charity because we're the only one in the UK that's dedicated to kind of supporting women who are affected by cervical cancer and their families, but we also do a lot around prevention and cervical health generally.
Mm-hmm. So what is a health information manager?
It's a very good question. It sounds fancy, but basically what it means is I'm responsible for creating the charity's health information. So I'll work with users, which is kind of a jargony term for just people who have a certain experience. So maybe they've had cervical cancer, maybe they've just gone for screening and have had an experience that they want to share, as well as experts who will tell us, yes, this is right, or no, this is wrong. And then I'll take those comments and I'll kind of make it into something that's hopefully understandable and interesting for the general public to read.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think the first thing we should probably do is talk a little bit about how the charity started.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do that. So it was started by James Maxwell and his wife, Jo. And Jo, unfortunately, died of cervical cancer at age 40. But what they found when she was diagnosed is that there was just no information there. They couldn't find anything about cervical cancer because it is considered a rare cancer.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. And they also couldn't find anyone else who'd had that experience. So she felt really isolated, and obviously her family around her trying to support her. It's just really difficult when there's not much out there. So when she died, her wish was really that anyone else who went through that experience would have somewhere to go where they could get that information, they could get that support, they could connect with other people who are going through the same thing. And that's where it was born from. And her family and friends are still very involved in the charity now, which is really lovely. And they've been able to see how we've grown.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of true. It's one of those cancers that sounds extra scary.
Yes, because of where
yeah,
it is.
I think so. And that's really why I wanted to do this podcast, because I for one, and we can get into this, but I was so nervous to do a cervical screening, and everything about it just was freaking me out.
Yeah, that is completely common and normal, and I get it. I mean, it's not like any of us go, yay, it's time for a smear test.
Yeah.
It is something that is quite invasive and feels like you're having your privacy kind of explored into.
Absolutely. So. And then when did you start working with the charity?
I started with the charity, it's pretty much bang on 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
And we're also in our 20th anniversary now, so I feel like our anniversaries are kind of lining up quite nicely. But yeah, so two years ago I've been working, and it feels like, I mean, we do so much that it's just one of those jobs that never gets boring, because there's so many areas to cover, from screening all the way through to cancer and kind of the impact of that it has on everyday life. So yeah, it's a really interesting job and a really interesting charity to work for.
And am I right in thinking that you guys worked with Daisy, my jewelry family?
Yes, we did. Your jewelry family. I love it. Yes, they were so kind, and they created this really beautiful necklace that I'm kind of desperate to get.
But you don't have it?
I know. It's on my list. It's one of those things that I think I'm going to slip into a Christmas list
Absolutely. Like, I'm looking at your jewelry right now, and I'm like, that necklace would look so good with that.
Well, I'll take that. This is a good sales pitch, by the way. I'm very impressed. But yeah, it's just gorgeous. It's the female figure on a kind of a gold bar, and they're giving us a percentage of the sales, which is just wonderful.
Daisy is honestly the best. I feel like I don't have to say this at all, but
I want to.
Yeah. They're seriously the best group of girls. So yeah, and then I met somebody from the charity at there was like a life drawing.
Class. Very nice.
And anyway, so that's how this whole thing kind of came to be.
Yeah, well, thank you for having us on. Like, it's really nice to do this sort of thing.
Truly my pleasure. Okay, so I don't really know where to start. I guess it's what is a cervical screening?
Yep,
what happens?
That's a good place to start.
What does it do? When should you start? Let's talk about it.
All right, we'll break it down and we'll get into some detail on it. So in the UK, cervical screening, also called a smear test, they're exactly the same thing. It's just which language, you know, you prefer to use. It's a test that kind of checks that your cervix is healthy in a way. So we use the word screening, and what we mean is it's a test to prevent something happening.
I see.
So with cervical screening, it's looking for any changes to the cells in your cervix to make sure that nothing strange is going on there, where they're not changing in a way that we don't want them to.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, we can try and treat them or monitor them to make sure that they don't go on to develop into something more serious like cervical cancer. So a lot of people tend to think that it's a test for cancer, and they think they're going to turn up, they're going to have the test, and they're going to be told either you have cancer or you don't have cancer. That is not what it's for at all. It's just to check that nothing strange is going on. Your cells are behaving themselves, essentially. And in the UK, you get invited from about 24 and a half, you might get your first invite. And you can go as soon as you get that invite. And it's every 3 years up to age 49.
Okay.
And then from 50 to 64, it's every 5 years. And you'll get that invite in the post. So it's not something that you have to kind of mark on your phone or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they're at those intervals is because the way that the cell changes happen and develop means that you don't need to go more frequently.
Right.
Because it's a really slow growing thing. So if anything was going on, having it at those 3 and 5 year intervals mean that it would be caught.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same anymore, but in Canada, where I grew up, I got my first smear test when I was 16. And it was basically like, if you are sexually active, you need to get a smear test. So, I mean, I'm revealing a little bit of my virginity story there, but it was the most traumatic experience of my life. Yes, I know. And I want to talk about
that. Yeah, what happened?
So basically, I hadn't actually had, I think I had sex once, but, you know, first time you have sex, it's that's a whole other podcast, isn't it? So then I went in and got this thing, and they used a giant speculum. Well, it felt giant to me. And the whole thing was just, I felt it was rough, and it hurt.
Yeah.
So it really, really scared me. And then I did not get another smear test until last year, and I'm going to be 29.
Wow.
Because I was so scared of it. And actually, I have a question from a caller, and it's all about that.
Go for it.
Hi, Estee. I'm so glad that you're speaking with Joe's Trust. I think they're an incredible charity doing wonderful things for women's health. One thing I did want to ask was regarding smear tests. For me, it's quite a painful experience, and I know for a lot of others it is too. And there is quite a focus on it being a quick and easy procedure. And for some of us, it's not. So I just wondered whether Joe's Trust would have any tips for how to make it a little bit more comfortable.
So I really love that question, and I'm not putting this in the podcast to freak everyone out. But, you know, for some of us, it is painful.
It absolutely is. And I think something that Joe's is really focused on at the moment is changing the language around screening from something that can sometimes feel a bit, it's a really quick test, just go and do it, to a more supportive and compassionate conversation. Because you're right, it is uncomfortable or it's painful for some people, and we need to acknowledge that. The good thing about kind of these kind of physical barriers to screening is that there is usually a solution.
Yes.
And there's a couple of things. So it's not just try this and if not, you're kind of, that's your lot. There are a few things that you could try. So if someone was finding it painful, kind of the first thing that we suggest, if they feel comfortable, is to have a conversation with the nurse or whoever's taking the sample. Because if they know that you find it painful, they can do something to support you. If they don't know, unless you tell them, they're just going to kind of say, okay, well, you know, hopefully they are asking you those questions anyway and trying to find out your experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just helps if you can have an open conversation about it. So that's the first thing that we would say. The other thing is that there are different sizes of speculum. So you mentioned giant, scary speculum, bad experience.
Yeah.
Totally hear you. We do get that a lot. So there's kind of the standard size speculum that I feel like I want to have one here and show you. But yeah, there's kind of a standard size speculum. But there are smaller ones as well.
Yeah.
So if you think, you know what, actually, I've been before and I know that that's uncomfortable for me. Or if it's your first time and you think, I'm a little bit nervous about this, I would prefer to have the smaller one. Ask for it. They should have it there.
Yeah.
And if they don't, you can always say, well, you know what, actually, I don't want to do it today. Can I come back when you have that available?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like once you're in that room, that's it. It has to happen. You can have a conversation. You can ask to see the kind of tools, I guess, that they're using. Mm-hmm. You can get comfortable with it. You can also ask for them to use a bit more lube on the speculum. So that is the bit that a lot of people find uncomfortable.
Lube is the greatest invention.
It's
not only for this, but for
many things.
For life.
For many things, it is. And it would have to be a water-based lube. And we know some sample takers or nurses are a little bit more reluctant to use it.
Mm.
But it is fine if it's a water-based lubricant. It shouldn't interfere with the results. It shouldn't interfere with how they look at that sample. So it shouldn't be an issue for them to use it. And I guess the other thing is to give yourself time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is quite a... You go into the room, you do the test, you're back out again. Like with any doctor's appointment, you know, you get kind of a slot of, 5 or 10 minutes and it's done. If you need some extra time, ask for it. You know, when you're booking the appointment, you can say, is there any chance I can have a longer appointment or a double appointment, it's sometimes called. And that just means you can have those conversations and you don't have to feel like, oh gosh, the test is over. Now I have to rush, you know, to, you know, put my pants back on and, you know, and get out of
there. Yeah, then they're just pushing you out onto the street and you're like,
Exactly. It just gives you some time to process what's happened, to, you know, get any advice from the nurse if you're worried about anything that might happen afterwards, and just to kind of make peace with what's just happened. Because for some people it isn't just a 5-minute test. It is something that can be a bit more of a big deal and a big challenge for them.
Yeah, I really resonate with everything you said, because like I said, I went a very long time between screenings and I was stressing about, I knew I had to get it again. I was all freaked out. And basically I went to my GP and I told her, I was like, I had a traumatic experience and I'm really scared.
Yeah.
And luckily she was so amazing with it. And exactly what you said, she showed me all of the tools, which I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but you know, she showed me all of them and she said, here's a smaller size speculum. This is the standard size. And we basically started from the smallest one and she just took it so slow. She was like, are you like, make sure you're breathing. Is this okay? And then she would take it out and then she would put a little bit more back in. And it was honestly so helpful. And the first time I went, I didn't manage to get the sample because I was still like very like, you know, your whole body is tense.
Yeah.
Well, mine was. And then I went back again and I kind of knew what to expect and we managed to get it. And then I've had another one since then. Actually, I had to get a colposcopy, which we can talk about.
Yes, we can.
But yeah, so then I went back a second time and managed to get it. And I was so glad I did because I did have irregular cells. Mm-hmm. So, which I definitely want to talk about because I was convinced my life was over. So
very common that we hear that. But it is your nurse sounds like the nurse that we all want and yes. that we want kind of across the board because that is what should be happening as standard. I mean, it shouldn't be that kind of the person who's going for the test has to prompt and take ownership, but sometimes that is just what has to happen. But yeah, a nurse who will talk you through each step before it happens,
yes.
get your consent, make sure you're feeling comfortable. And it is, you know, what you say about the fact that you didn't have it the first time you went, you came back and had it again.
Yeah.
That's completely fine. I think we don't talk enough about that. We kind of feel like, oh no, I wasn't able to go
well,
through
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah, I was a little bit disappointed and upset with myself.
But you shouldn't be at all. I mean, this is your health that mm-hmm. we're talking about. You're in control of it. And that's the biggest, it's something that we really focused on actually. We have an awareness week in January each year. And something that we really wanted to get across this year was that it's your test and you're in control of it. It's not for someone else to kind of say this is how it should be mm-hmm. for you, this is what your experience is. It's for you to say, well, actually, here are my needs, here's what's going to work for me, and if I choose to have the test, this is how I want it to go.
Yeah. So we know that cervical screenings are all about prevention.
Yeah.
So I do have a question about if cervical cancer runs in your family. So mm-hmm. let's play the question.
Hi, Estee. My name is Darby. I am from the United States. I just had a question because I know that cervical cancer runs in my family. And I'm wondering that if we know that we are predisposed to any sort of cervical cancer conditions, if we should bring that up differently in a doctor's appointment or if that's just something we should expect our doctor to look for. Thanks. Appreciate it. Bye.
It's a really interesting question, and it's one that we hear a lot of because a couple of other cancers do have that family link. But for cervical cancer, at the moment, there's no research that suggests that there is a family history of it. So it wouldn't be that if you have a family history, your doctor would kind of suggest that you have more regular smears or anything like that. I mean, I have to say, because the question is from an American caller, and obviously I'm talking purely from a UK perspective, so it may be different there, but in the UK, that is how it is at the moment. What I would say is I am not a medical expert or researcher, and there is a lot of research going on about HPV, which mm-hmm. is the human papillomavirus.
What the hell is
it? It sounds scary, doesn't it?
It
doesn't,
really does.
It really does. So HPV, which is, I mean, human papillomavirus is the long name for it. You will always hear it called HPV. No one's going to be saying that all the time. It's essentially a virus, a little bit like a cold, which we get, and when I say we, I mean nearly all of us. It's about 4 in 5 of us will get it at some point in
yes.
our lives. And usually our bodies, our immune systems get rid of it. And that's great, doesn't cause any issues. Sometimes if, and we don't really know why yet, which is kind of the weird bit, mm-hmm. if our bodies can't get rid of it, and it becomes what we call a persistent infection, which means it just stays in our bodies. And that's when we can see things like cell changes happening.
Right. Is it a sexually transmitted thing?
We don't. So at Joe's, we've chosen not to use the term sexually transmitted infection.
Okay.
And the reason is because even though the HPV that is kind of in your genital area, which is where obviously the cervix mm-hmm. is usually sexually transmitted, it can be transmitted through other means as well.
Right.
So I'm trying to think of how to say this without it sounding really scary. But for example, if someone has HPV and they give birth, there's a chance that their child may have HPV, which is usually cleared easily and there's nothing to worry about. But it, because it's not always sexually transmitted, it's usually sexually transmitted. And to say there's a massive stigma around anything to do with kind of the cervix, cervical cancer, the genitals, particularly for women, I think, anyway. And to add, an STI into yeah. that as well, there's a real, I mean, we hear from women all the time who have to have conversations with their partner, and then, you know, their partners don't want to be intimate with them anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to make people realize that actually, even though it's usually a sexually transmitted virus, it's really common. We've all got it, basically, yeah. Particularly if we've been sexually active. And there's no treatment for it.
Are there physical symptoms of it?
So there's no symptoms of HPV itself, mm-hmm. but obviously they can cause a condition. So there are different types of HPV. So HPV, we kind of use as this umbrella term, but there's over 200 types. And most of those, they don't really do anything. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of there. And then they go, and then we could get them again. They don't cause any problems. Then we have some types which we call low-risk HPV, which may cause things like genital warts. So that would be...
That does not sound low-risk to me.
That's interesting you say that. So a lot of people think it's more unpleasant, but it's not going to cause you harm.
Okay.
Fine. I mean, genital warts, yeah, it's...
Not
Let's
ideal.
Face it, it's not the nicest thing, but it doesn't mean that you're more likely to get something like cervical cancer or cell changes. It's treatable. You get a cream usually and you can get rid of them. So it's low risk in the sense that it's not going to cause you kind of any serious harm. Mm-hmm. It's just not very nice to have. But then we have a few HPV types, which we call high risk, which are linked to things like cancer.
Right.
And it's those HPV types that we're kind of looking at and trying to figure out, why is it that some of us clear them? Why is it that some of us don't? And that's the ongoing research, kind of to bring it back to that family history question that we still don't know the answer to. Mm-hmm. We don't know why some of us don't clear it. And it will be when that research is done and we have those answers that we'll be able to know more about, okay, are there certain people who maybe need a bit more attention? But as it stands at the moment, mm-hmm. there's not that family link.
And then what about the vaccine? Because I know that, like, I didn't get the vaccine.
Me neither.
So is it really effective? Should people be getting it?
So it's one of those things where we wouldn't say should. Okay. It's someone's choice, but it is very effective. And when you're vaccinated, you're not just kind of protecting yourself, you're protecting the people around you as well. And the HPV vaccine is so exciting because it's one of the major ways where we could actually see cervical cancer completely prevented. Mm. We may see a time when there's no one else is affected by this, which is just incredible, because you can't say that about a lot of conditions or illnesses. So with the HPV vaccine in the UK, it's currently part of our schools program on the NHS. So it's free. And depending on where you live, in Scotland, you'll be offered it from 11. In England, Wales and Northern Ireland, you'll be offered it from 12 or 13. You get it as part of the schools program. Usually a parent has to sign a consent form to say yes, you know, like the standard jabs. It's the same as that. It's in your upper arm. You'll have two doses of it if you're under 15. You'll have three doses if you're over 15. Mm-hmm. And you can actually, recently it's changed so that if you were offered the first dose of the vaccine, you can get it for free up to age 25, mm-hmm. which is really exciting. Boys are also going to be offered it from September.
That was a question I have. Can men get HPV?
Yeah. Yes. I feel like that should have been like my first massive headline. It's not just women.
Right.
Yes.
Why does it seem like it's just women?
It's because currently there's no test for men.
That's right.
So where we've got cervical screening, which is changing to look for HPV, for men, it's just... If they get a condition, mm-hmm. Like a cancer that's linked to HPV, then they may know they have it. But otherwise, they might not. I mean, they could get genital warts as well. But it's not as talked about for guys at all. And that's something that, again, at Joe's, we really want to address and make people aware that it's, you know, it's not just women who get this and pass it on. Mm-hmm. Men can get it too. It's just that they're probably less aware.
So if you... go and get your test done and you know you have HPV, can you still carry on having sex with your, say, long-term boyfriend?
You can. I mean, it's a really tricky one, actually, and it's a question that we're getting a lot of now as HPV kind of becomes, I guess, more in the public consciousness. But there's, you know, with some STIs, you are told, oh, contact your past partners.
Right,
let
exactly.
Let them know,
exactly.
This, that, and the other. There's nothing like that for HPV. And the reason is because so many of us have it already.
Yeah, yeah.
And the majority of the time, which I really want to stress, it doesn't cause any harm. Mm. I think it's 9 in 10 of us just have it and get rid of it, and it's no problems. So yes, you could continue, you know, having sex with your long-term partner or
whoever else
you want to have sex with. But we know that for some people, they may feel a responsibility to just have mm-hmm. that conversation about it and let them know. And if they want to do that, we would just say, please make sure you're really informed about HPV.
Right.
And you have the information to hand. And also, obviously, we are happy to get questions for it. So we have a helpline. We've got our website. We want people to have those conversations, but have them with the right information.
Absolutely.
So people aren't getting, because it's scary. It is a scary subject.
It is.
So people aren't getting scared, and they do know that actually for most people, not a problem.
It's not a big deal. Okay, well, I'm going to tell a personal anecdote here because I think it's really important, because I was terrified. So I went such a long time between getting my smear, then I got my smear, and I was in the high risk category for HPV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I seriously thought I have cancer. That's what I thought. I was stressed out. I was calling my mom crying. I was literally like, it was very, very upsetting. So she told me, and I didn't know what HPV was. So I kind of knew,
yeah.
but I didn't really know. And I was like, how serious is this? Like, do I have to call all my past partners and be like, oh. yo, you got this now? Mm. Like, I was going through all the motions in my brain. She basically said, look, you don't have to worry about anything really, but let's just do a colposcopy.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get into what that is. But first, I think it's important, and we haven't actually done this yet, is what actually happens during a regular smear test.
Yes.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I didn't tell you.
I don't
that
know how we missed that, but I want to say the difference between that and a colposcopy. So you go
yes.
in there, you put your gown on or whatever.
You go in there. So in the UK, yeah, you don't get a gown. It's just very,
yeah,
very sad. Very sad. But yeah, you go in there, you will have a chat with a nurse who will hopefully explain what the test is about and what they're going to be doing. You go behind a curtain, so you've got a private area to either, I mean, if you're wearing trousers, take your trousers off, take your pants off. If you're wearing a dress or a skirt, you can just slip your knickers off, and then you lie on kind of the examination couch mm-hmm. or the bed that's usually in a doctor's office. And then you've got a little sheet to cover yourself, a little plastic sheet, which, you know, can seem like it's not covering you a lot. But it is, and what we have to remember is that these sample takers, they see it all the time anyway,
yeah.
so they're not kind of studying genitals intensely.
And I mean, if anyone has ever been waxed or had laser hair removal, like,
It's nowhere near as intimate,
I feel like, as that.
It really isn't. So what you'll do is they'll probably ask you to lie on your back and have your knees bent up and your ankles together so your legs are apart.
Oh, that's the scariest bit.
Well, you can also go on your side. So some people find it more comfortable to just turn over on their side with their legs up. So there is that option as well, which a lot of people don't know about, but it's perfectly legitimate. They can take the sample like that. And then what they'll do is they'll take the speculum, which is, I'm trying to think of how to describe a speculum in the best way. It's usually plastic, and it's kind of just a tube that opens up almost. And they put that in gently, very gently, and it's new and it's clean. And what they'll do is they'll open that up. And the idea is that it just opens the walls of the vagina so they can have a really good view of the cervix.
Right.
Because that means they can then take, we call it a brush. It's kind of a little, it's a tiny, tiny, thin, soft brush. It has some little kind of rubber bits on the end. And they'll put that into your vagina, up to your cervix, and they'll just twist it around, and that'll be them taking the samples. But it's usually the speculum that people feel. So the brush people don't tend to kind of feel or notice.
Okay.
Once they have that, they will take that out. They will take the speculum out, and they'll pop that sample, that little brush, in a little bottle of liquid, and that's just to preserve it so it can be sent off to the lab. At the lab, they'll look at it. So we're a bit weird at the moment in the UK. We're kind of switching between two types of screening. So some parts of the country are still doing something called cytology, which is when they'll first look at that sample under a microscope and they'll be looking at it for cell changes. Some parts of the country, and eventually all of us, will move to what we call HPV primary testing, which just means that they're going to be looking at that sample for HPV first. Mm. And if they find HPV, then they will go on to check it for cell changes.
I see.
Because the idea is, if you don't have HPV, even if you had cell changes, the likelihood of those developing is so low because it's the HPV that kind of makes that change.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, from my personal experience as someone who was very stressed about this, once the speculum is in, it's pretty smooth sailing from there, from my experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we would hope so. I think the thing to recognize is we're all individuals and we all have a completely different experience. And the best thing to do is have that open line of communication. So if at any point during the test, but you know, before the speculum's in, when the speculum's in, whenever, there's not a point at which you can't say, hang on, can we stop? Can we just take a breather? Can we rewind a little bit? Like, it's fine.
That's a really, really good point. But I will say, speaking of take a breather, breathing was so helpful to me.
Yes.
And I was like fully doing my yoga breaths during this thing. She was like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, just doing my breathing. Inhale, exhale.
But it does help. It really does. Because I think you mentioned earlier about feeling really tense, like your whole body feels tense. And yeah, absolutely. We hear that a lot, particularly from people who are going for the first time.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to expect. And suddenly you have a stranger there who's asking you to kind of lie on a couch and do this. So yeah, going through those kind of breathing exercises, or even taking some music or a magazine or something to kind of take your mind off it can really help.
Okay, so I did that. And then a couple days later, I got my results. It was the same doctor who took the test for me. And I was like, oh, okay, high risk HPV, cool. Well, right. She's like, and she's like, I don't want you to be stressed out. Obviously, I was. She's like, but I want to book you in for a colposcopy just to get a closer look at these cells, I guess is what they do during a colposcopy. So when I heard the word colposcopy and it was in a hospital, I had to go to a separate hospital.
Yep.
That's when I started getting freaked out.
Yeah, I get that. I totally get that. And it's something, again, we hear all the time from people. Because it is in a hospital,
that is
so worrying for people. And colposcopy is a weird one because it's kind of used both to just do some further tests and diagnose something, if there is something to be diagnosed. And it can also be used to treat. So we kind of have these two separate functions for it. So speaking about, I guess, the further test diagnosing bit first. So, yeah, you're right. If you have high-risk HPV or if you had cell changes, you would be invited there. And it is just so they can take a closer look at it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they do. Kind of like a screening in that there'll be a speculum, you'll be on the couch, they'll put that in, they'll open it up. But rather than immediately taking a swab, they have this, I guess, kind of special microscope, which we call a colposcope, which stays outside of the body, thankfully, doesn't go in, but they just can really see the cervix in a lot of magnified detail.
I feel like my doctor had it on his head. Like, it was like a, is that what it is? What was that? Was that a light or something?
Yes.
Like, he was going deep, dark, cave diving
they
or something.
Do, they can have lights on. So usually it's attached to the colposcope, the light, but I like the image of having kind of a miner's light on that.
That's what it was. And I was like, oh my God.
But yeah. I mean, wherever this light is, the point is they're just trying to see the cervix. And there are a few different tests that they might do. So sometimes they'll put a liquid on the cervix that will highlight the areas. If there are any areas where the cells have changed, they can then see that. Sometimes they'll take a sample of the cervix, a very, very tiny, tiny piece of tissue from it, which is called a biopsy. That's something that can feel, you know, people can get a little bit worried about.
Yes.
They usually don't use an anesthetic for that.
Yeah.
So they might ask you to cough or something and then take it. But again, if for you it's something where you think, you know what, I need that anesthetic, you can ask for a local anesthetic. Mm-hmm. Like that's completely fine. But generally it's kind of like a sharp pinch for a second and then it's done. And I say that like it's nothing. Obviously it is something. And it's something again to talk to your doctor who is called a colposcopist about if you're worried about it at all. And what would happen then is that little sample of tissue would be sent off so they can say, all right, here's what's really going on here. Mm-hmm. And they can say you've got this level of cell changes, or they might say, no, actually, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And from there, they can say, here's what we recommend for you.
Mm-hmm. So when I went in for my colposcopy, he had the miner's light on. And also, it's a camera. And he put a camera.
Did you have the screen next to you? Yeah. So you sometimes have a screen so you can actually see your cervix and what's happening to it.
Guys, I'm wriggling around in my chair right now. So basically, it's like a little tiny camera. And he put it inside my vagina. And he was like, if you want to watch this, you can literally just turn and it was like a big TV screen. And I was like, I am not watching that.
You didn't watch it?
Hell no, I did not watch that. But he said a lot of people do.
Yeah.
So he was doing that. And then you mentioned that they put, they can sometimes put a fluid on the cervix to see different cells. So he did that.
Mm-hmm.
He put, I think it was iodine.
Yes.
Which on a piece of cotton and then put that on my cervix. Sweet. And then he decided he needed to take the biopsy, was freaking out because I knew it was a potential thing. And he was like, we can either do it now or you can come back and do it another
time. That's so good that he offered that.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And then he was like, there's also the option to go under anesthetic to get it, but I'm in here. What do you want to do? And I was basically like, just do it. I was really freaking out. Mm-hmm. But he told me to cough. He took the biopsy. I'm not going to lie. Was not amazing.
No.
Luckily, everything was fine in the end. I was a little freaked out because I was like, if they need to take a biopsy, this must be serious. But when I got the results, he said it was pretty normal. We should just keep an eye on it and that I probably will carry on having these abnormal cells. But anyway, the HPV's gone now.
And that's really the thing. That I feel like the HPV is kind of the kingpin of this whole thing. Like that's what they're looking for and that's what is going to drive these changes or not.
Yeah. So I was really excited when I got, because I went and got another smear test recently. Well, not that recently, maybe like, I don't know, 8 months ago. And yeah, my doctor was like, you don't even have HPV anymore. So that was amazing. And I think for me, I was so nervous about it. And what this whole thing has taught me is it's very important to go get your cervical screening done because I just felt so much more in control of my body afterwards. Mm-hmm. And not gonna lie, the whole thing was very stressful, but I am so glad that I did it, because if that was something, if that biopsy turned out to be something more serious, then I could have dealt with it. So that's my story. And I remember I feel like a couple of years ago, I think Joe's Trust came to me and was like, do you want to work with us on this campaign? And I was like, I can't, because I cannot preach people getting a cervical screening, because I can't go. I'm so stressed. I was like, I'm the one who needs to be watching that campaign. But now it's something that's like, you know, things can change in an instant, and it's really important to go.
It's so interesting that you say that, because I think, for us, we're kind of, as a charity, we're very evidence-based. And so we can see that the evidence says the benefits of going for screening outweigh those risks. Mm-hmm. And that's what we kind of try and inform women with. But ultimately, it is someone's choice. And I think it's the more experiences we hear like yours, the more open that conversation's going to be.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of people, it will be, you know, oh, well, actually, no, I'm just going to shut it down. I don't even want to think about it. I don't want to know about it.
Exactly.
It's a private area. It's not something that – it's something that I feel squeamish about, that I feel is going to be traumatic for me, that I feel in my culture isn't acceptable. There's so many reasons someone might not want to go. And the more that we hear from people like you, or anyone who actually questioned it and said, oh, I don't know how I feel about this, or I find it difficult, the better it's going to be, because it's not just going to be people saying – you need to go for this. It's going to be saying, here are the benefits of this test. Yeah. Here's my experience. Here's what made it better. Mm-hmm. To be honest, like, sharing tips and things like that is so useful.
I totally agree. And that's another reason I wanted to do this podcast, because especially when I had to do the colposcopy, I did not know where to turn.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying to like my best friends, like, I've got to go do this thing. Have you ever done it? And I was kind of like embarrassed by it, you know,
because
it's so personal. And actually one of my friends was like, oh, I've had that done. Like, you know, and it's like so nice just to hear someone else's experience.
It is, yeah.
Is there a decline in screenings?
There has been. So in England, I think we're at a 20 or 21 year low at the moment.
Wow.
And it's, yeah, there is. So it's about one in four women generally who don't attend. And actually in our 25 to 29 age group, that's even worse. So it's one in three, and in some areas, one in two who aren't going. And like I said, we hear so many reasons or concerns, worries about screening. And so it's so wide ranging. It's a physical thing. It's a mental thing. Sometimes it's just a practical thing, like access or not being able to get an appointment at the right time or anything like that. What Joe's is trying to do is trying to tackle all of those barriers and just make sure that people feel validated in those concerns, and that there's not, you know, it's not like there's a list that we've created saying, like, these are all the reasons why someone might not want to go for screening. Pick one of these and then that's your lot. Like, we've all got multiple reasons and it's things that we won't speak about in this podcast that are all valid reasons for being concerned about something. So it's trying to figure out how to address that and how to make the test the best it possibly can be for people. Yeah. And there will still be some people for who it's not possible. And in that case, we want to be talking about symptoms and getting that message out there. But for most people, we hope there is a solution to however they're feeling about it.
Yeah. Can you get a smear test whilst you're on your period?
You can. However, it's a tricky one. It's a really interesting one, because a while ago, you would just hear, no, you have to go at a specific time in your cycle.
Oh, really?
But what we've found now is really the most important thing is, if you want to go for the test, to go for the test. Mm-hmm. So the reason that it's recommended you don't go when you're actually bleeding is because we talked about that sample and how sometimes they need to look at it and try and see the cells. Mm. if you're bleeding and they have blood in that sample, it may make it a little bit less clear. And you may come back with what we call an inadequate result, which just means that they haven't been able to test it properly, which means you would have to go back for another test.
Right.
So we want to obviously minimize that for people, particularly if the test isn't something that they feel that comfortable with. So that's why it's recommended don't go while you are on your period. However, if that is the only time you can get an appointment and you want to go,
just go.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there is any truth to this, but I have heard that there is a link to getting cervical cancer because you are using your laptop on your lap.
I'm in trouble if that's the case. I've got to say, I have never heard this.
Okay.
I mean, I don't, like I said, not a medical expert, so I don't want to definitively say no, but I feel like that is what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's not something
fine
we've ever heard, because, I mean, because the, again, we go back to the HPV, because the HPV is the thing, as far as I'm aware, the laptop stopped beaming HPV out of it. So we're going to say a no.
Okay.
A no to that. But that's such an interesting one.
I know. Well, I was saying to you before we started recording that normally I get, you know, a decent amount of questions for my podcast guests. But this episode, no one called in. And I was like,
this is very upsetting.
What is with you guys? You don't want to call in? I have so many questions about this. But I really think there's something still very taboo about this.
There is, and I think as well, we hear a lot that people think their questions are silly.
Mm.
Like, oh, I should know. I think we just all assume we should know it.
Mm-hmm.
But when actually, you know, you're not talking, I mean, I'm thinking of my own family. It was never mentioned. I didn't know about it really until I got the invite through and I was like, Mum,
is this the worst invite
ever?
Is
this a thing? What's going on? Because I never heard, you know, any of the females in my family speak about it.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those things, like anything to do with, you know, the genital area, that we just don't talk about. And we think it is a bit, oh, either I should automatically know this or no one else is asking this question, so it must be a bit silly. But actually, it's not. And at Joe's, we're constantly asking just questions that people would probably think are really weird to, you know, the experts.
Yeah.
So it's, please ask us questions, like come to us. We can help.
And say you do the test and unfortunately you do get cervical cancer. Is there treatment? What is the next?
Oh, yeah. So it's really rare actually for someone to be diagnosed with cervical cancer via screening.
Oh.
Because it's a test to prevent. So the idea is that you might get cell changes, which definitively are not cancer. And just having cell changes doesn't mean that they would even develop into cervical cancer. But at the moment, we don't know which will and which wouldn't, which is why you may be offered treatment for them.
Mm.
But so it's really, really very rare for someone to be diagnosed with cervical cancer after screening. But if you were, or if you had symptoms and you went for an appointment and you had an exam and you were then diagnosed via that route, there is treatment for it. And it's usually very successful.
Okay.
So with cervical cancer, if it is caught through screening, it's very early stage usually, which means that it's easier to treat. It means that the impact and the effect that you might have, so particularly physical effects, because the treatment might be a bit lesser, it might be less, but the treatment and the outcomes for it are really positive generally. Obviously, with any cancer, you have different stages of it, so it really depends which stage you're diagnosed. But even if you're diagnosed at a later stage, there are still treatments that can happen. I would say that something that we hear a lot from women and something that people tend to come to our services for or use our forum to connect with other women about are the impact on their life after treatment. So I think it happens with a lot of illnesses. You kind of go, you get treated, and then it's like, oh, you're better. Off you go. Go and live your life. But actually, there are, you know, there's a psychological effect of, you know, maybe having had cancer, is it going to come back? are my family at risk now? How do I, you know, I feel changed. How do I go about my normal life mm-hmm. now? Is what is my normal life now? How does that look? As well as the physical impact. So a lot of the treatments for cervical cancer may have an impact on someone's fertility. And because it's a cancer that we do sometimes, or we do see in younger women, so maybe in your 30s, your late 20s, your 30s as well, that can be a really difficult thing, because it may be that it's harder to conceive. It may be that if you do conceive or get pregnant, your pregnancy may be considered higher risk. So you may need a little bit more monitoring just to make sure that everything's going well. Or it may be that you have a treatment that means that you wouldn't be able to get pregnant, in which case there are other options. But for some people, that's not right. Or for some people, it's just not quite the same thing. And so we really want to kind of raise awareness that that's all going on for people as well. Mm-hmm. It's not just like you get the diagnosis, you get the treatment, and then you're done.
Yeah.
There's these lifelong impacts that can happen. And I mean, I don't want to kind of scare people by talking about this, but it's another reason why it's so incredible that we have cervical screening, mm-hmm. this preventative test that means that we don't have to see people going through those things and you know, having their quality of life affected mm-hmm. by it. Luckily, if you do have those effects after treatment, there are support services available for you. There are things that can, you know, manage how you're feeling and you know, practical things that you can do. But obviously the ideal would be if no one got to that stage where they needed that. So yeah, in summary, treatment usually very successful, and it's how we continue to support those people after right. they've had treatment,
yeah.
as well as the everyone around them, because, you know, it's not just the person who has that diagnosis. I mean, even with something like cell changes, like you said, you kind of feel like I want to talk to my friends, talk mm-hmm. to my family, do this. You know, there's an impact on everyone
Absolutely.
Around them, and it's them understanding that they can come and ask questions as well,
yeah.
and it's okay to kind of be open about that conversation, to get the support that everyone needs.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing, is just trying to be more open about this, because it is kind of one of those things that's still a little bit hush hush. But mm-hmm. I think also just changing the language around it, like even how I was just in earlier in this episode, I was like, oh, worst invitation ever. It's not the worst invitation yeah. ever. It's actually incredible that you have the opportunity to get a test like that done. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a bit of changing perspective.
It is. It absolutely is. And that's something we're really focused on. We just want to open up the conversation. And, you know, at Joe's, we don't want to say to people, this is how you have to feel about it, or this is the language that you have to use about it. But if we can just say, actually, yeah, okay, yeah, it's not particularly nice, but here's the benefits of it,
mm-hmm.
or here's what you can do to make it better for you, or
yeah.
here's how you can take control, it would make such a difference. And I think we are seeing more people talk about it, particularly
yeah.
on social media. There seems to be those conversations, and it's so nice to kind of go on Twitter or something and see a thread of people supporting each other through it. If someone says they're nervous and someone says, I was nervous as well, here's what I did, or something like that, it's really heartwarming to see people kind of taking ownership of it and wanting to help raise awareness for other people.
Absolutely. So what is next for Joe's? What is the big aim and hope and dream?
I mean, the biggest aim and dream is that we will see cervical cancer completely eliminated. So the idea is with the HPV vaccine going hand in hand with a screening program, eventually no one should be diagnosed. That's the big dream. Is that, I mean, essentially we're saying put us out of a job, which will be, yeah, but it would be amazing to see that. But as we work towards that, and we're kind of raising awareness of prevention and everything like that, we also are so focused on supporting people who get any kind of results. So whether it's someone who says, who's been told, oh, you've got HPV, but you've got nothing else, so don't worry about it. that person's going to need a big amount of support. Same for someone who's told you have cell changes. They need support. Definitely for someone who's told they have cervical cancer. They need support and everyone around them needs support. Mm-hmm. So while we're kind of pushing towards that time where no one will be diagnosed with cervical cancer, we need to be looking at how can we support all these people along the way. And we do that in a number of ways. I mean, I've mentioned our services before, but we have, we've got lots of free information on the website. We've got a helpline, which is just amazing. Like, I can't sing their praises enough. It's manned by volunteers who all have personal experience in some way, and all they want to do is kind of have those conversations with people and reassure them and give them some tips and guidance. And we have a forum as well, which is just that kind of coming back to what Joe wanted, which was to be able to connect with other people who have had a specific experience. That is where we see that happening. Just loads of threads of someone saying, I'm going for colposcopy. What does this mean? I've had this result. Has anyone else had this? And seeing kind of the influx of replies and people forming friendships and those support networks is just wonderful to see. Mm-hmm. And for medical questions, which I feel, because I'm not able to answer them, but if anyone who is listening did have a really specific medical question, we have something called an Ask the Expert service, which is online as well. You can go on, you can submit your question, you can be anonymous, and a healthcare expert will reply within 2 weeks, and hopefully give you something that you're looking for, the answer that you're looking for. So that's kind of what we're focusing on, as well as the prevention side of it, is just making sure that people have got that support.
Right. So where can people find you guys? I know you said your website, and let's just list it out.
So our website is joestrust.org.uk, and that is joestrust.org.uk. Our helpline, which is free to call, and it's a national thing as well. I feel like I should say that, because we definitely want more callers from Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland too, is 0808 802 8000. And that's free of charge. And if people go on the website, they can find our forum and that Ask the Expert service as well. So that's where to find us. Social media, we have a Twitter account, which is at Joe's Trust. And with Instagram, you can find us at Joe Cervical Cancer Trust as well. So, please do come and give us questions, and let us do what we've been created for, basically.
Yeah, well, I think it's amazing what you guys are doing, and what a legacy of Joe, for Joe.
It's really brilliant, and it's so nice, actually, because her children are very involved in the charity still, and kind of, we had a video with them for our 20th anniversary, which has just started, but they were just saying, seeing people being so grateful to have these different services, have the right support when they knew that their mum didn't get it, is just the most wonderful thing. Oh. And I think for all of us who work there, that's the main goal always, is to just, if we can help someone, if someone can come to us and walk away thinking, okay, I feel like I have an answer for that, or I feel like I'm not the only one who feels that way. That just makes our day.
Well, that is a lovely sentiment to end on. Thank you so much for being here, Imogen. Considering this was your very first podcast, what a pro.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you made it easy. I'm not going to lie. Like, I like the line of questioning. It was good.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.